I'm sitting here with someone who is either one of the most inspirational and motivational people I've ever met, or just one of the craziest. It's Russell Cook, otherwise known as the Hardest Geezer. Hi, Russell.
Hi, mate. Thank you for having me on.
So, I mean, geezer, it's got the element of a little odd or eccentric, but it's also got the feel of, like, just an average bloke.
Yes.
You're currently running the length of Africa.
Yes.
So which do you think it is? A bit odd or just an average bloke?
Well, I think it started off as just an average bloke, you know. Maybe we've become a little bit more odd as the years have gone by. So maybe a bit of both.
Is it something, though, that an average bloke could take on, this kind of challenge?
Well, you know, I'm big on the philosophy of, you know, that crazy things can happen. And when I first started running, I could barely even run 5K. You know, I couldn't run 5K, and now I run like 50 odd every day. So maybe, you know, not every average geezer could do it, but maybe they could learn, or maybe they could, you know, get themselves in shape enough to do it. Maybe.
Well, I mean, you said on Instagram you're happy to see so many people being inspired to get out and be active because of your run. So do you think, though, you know, like we just said, that there is that little special that everyone can find, but what do you think that special is?
I think, you know, there's greatness in everyone. I really do believe that, and I think a lot of the time it takes a lot of shedding, takes a lot of chipping away to get to work towards that greatness, you know. But I think it's different for everyone, you know. Like, it might be running, might be might be carpentry, might be music, might be whatever it is, you know, might just be being a great dad or a great mum. So yeah, I'm big in that.
You also just said, you know, you couldn't run a 5K, you weren't always a runner.
Yeah.
And you actually started because of insecurity, which, you know, it's a much healthier way of dealing with it than I know that for a fact.
I did all the unhealthy ways first, so I kind of got stuck.
But can you explain that period for us a bit, you know?
Yeah.
Where you got stuck and how you found running to get out of it?
Yeah, sure. So I think the problems I faced as a young man were kind of similar to a lot of problems that a lot of young people face. And, you know, that's just trying to find my place in the world. I was, you know, went out into that big wide world after school, and, you know, took my confidence, took a hit. I was bringing no value to anyone anywhere. I felt useless, and the world kind of told me that. And, you know, for years, the years preceding that, I would kind of, you know, look for escapes. So gambling was a big one, and, you know, drinking and all these other silly things. And then you go around that merry-go-round enough times, and eventually it kind of hits you in the face that, you know, you need to do something differently. And the answers, you know, it's nothing wrong with the world, it's the answers are in here. And, you know, I've got to work on myself to try and change that. And that's kind of, you know, eventually what we did. I got a mate that asked me to run a half marathon, and then on a whim I did that, ran a full marathon, and it gave me the like actual real confidence for the first time in a proper long time, because I did something that I previously thought, you know, wasn't able to do. So I just kind of took that and applied it elsewhere in my life, and we've been on a roll ever since, mate.
Well, I mean, having a scroll through Instagram and YouTube and having to get to spend some time with you, you come across as sort of supremely confident, rather exuberant. Are there still any lingering insecurities?
I mean, I think there's insecurities with all of us at all points to some degree. So I'd probably say, yeah. I think, you know, I am much more confident now, and, you know, I've put a lot of work in. So, you know, that's kind of where the confidence is based from. You know, if you put the work in, then you don't have a reason to be so insecure anymore. You know?
One of the things about your Insta and your YouTube, though, and you're refreshingly honest. I mean, you don't shy
I try
away.
To be, yeah.
You don't shy away from admitting when you're struggling or even, you know, not quite feeling it.
Yeah.
It's not fake.
Yeah. Well, mate, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not going to come out here for 240 days running the entire length of Africa and wake up every morning and be bang at it. Yeah. You know, and I think I want to try and share the highs and the lows as much as possible, because, you know, people can see through that. I mean, I see through it all the time when you see people online going like, every day, like, blah, 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 I'm so, blah, 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 I'm doing this, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, sometimes that we just don't fancy it. It's just the human truth, man, yeah. Isn't it? You know, like, but we try and get it done. You know, try and get as much done as I can every day, no matter what.
I'm also curious. I mean, talking about insecurities and sort of not so much. Not that I'm saying you were suffering from depression or anything like that, but we know that exercise can help you get out of dark places.
Mm-hmm.
But extreme events like what you're doing can also lead you into some pretty dark
places. Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, how do you deal with that?
Well, you know, my kind of thinking on this is that, you know, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, and no matter how deep and dark the suffering feels or the darkness feels, you know, and it can feel really overwhelming at times, I always know that there's a light somewhere, and if I can't find it, it's because I haven't looked hard enough yet and I need to keep going. So, you know, that kind of just keeps me going throughout. You know, and these kind of runs do take you to dark places because it's a long open road out there, and 99.9% of the time I'm out there by myself. So, yeah, but like I said, light at the end of the tunnel, man.
What's going through your head in those long hours all by yourself?
Mate, so many different things go through my head, you know. I'm more of a, I look forward more than I look back, but, you know, sometimes I do think of my, you know, my younger self, and I feel like the obligation to do myself proud and, you know, do the people that care about me proud. I also look to the future and think, you know, one day I'll have my own kids running around, and, you know, one day I'll be an old man with grandkids and great-grandkids, and, you know, I want to do the most I can now to be the best dad that I can in the future, and be the best granddad that I can in the future. So that's, you know, those are really powerful ones for me.
And you're gonna have some pretty epic stories to tell them.
Hopefully, man. Yeah, hopefully so. I think, yeah.
It's not the first time that you're doing something like this, though, because you previously ran from Asia to London.
Yeah.
What did you learn on that run that's helped you so far on this one?
That was a really testing one, because I was by myself for that. So, you know, I just had a camel back and a hammock and a sleeping bag. And, you know, a lot of the philosophies that I've got now are kind of were born and made there, you know, were crafted there. And, like I said, the light at the end of the tunnel, zooming out of whatever situation I'm in and those kind of things. I think, you know, what that ultimately taught me is that if you carry on pushing, you know, then you'll make it eventually. So it kind of helped me perceive scale in a manageable way, because obviously challenges like this are just like, whoa, Africa's big. But you know, breaking that down into bite-sized chunks really does help, you know, day by day, brick by brick.
I mean, it also probably helps that you're not just Forrest Gumping it. Although after last night's run, I'm seeing a lot of people on now referring to you as Forrest Gump and attracting everyone to come run with you. But you're running. You're not just running for the sake of running. You're doing it to raise money for charity.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit about the organisations that you're raising funds for, and why those two.
Yeah, so the two organisations we're raising for are the Running Charity and WaterAid. The Running Charity is I've worked for a number of years, and the reason that I wanted to raise money for the Running Charity is that the whole mission of the charity is to help young people from disadvantaged backgrounds through use Spark as the running for a positive momentum in their life. And you know, that's kind of similar to the whole story that I've, my whole journey. So it's one that I know, you know, I've seen it works, you know, time and time again. It's like a systemic way to help change for someone from the inside, you know. So that's really powerful. And WaterAid, obviously, they provide like hygiene and clean water for people that need it all around the world, but largely in Africa as well. So that was something, you know, when we were looking, I wanted to do something for the people where I'm from, and I wanted to do something for the people that we're running, for the countries that we're running through, and WaterAid seemed like the best fit for that. You know, I can't think of anything too more important than getting water, to be honest, you know.
You talk about water, and that obviously brings up logistic issues. So let's talk logistics here for a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't just deciding to put on your shoes and pop out for a 5K.
Yeah, yeah.
What goes on behind the scenes?
So there's, you know, I've got a support team with three boys, and we've got a support van, and basically they're running around doing all the things that make it, you know, as easy for me to run that far every day as possible. So, you know, they'll go fill up waters, they'll get food ready, they'll film it all. They're, you know, they're filming all of our content online. You know, they're driving, they're finding camping spots, doing all, there's a lot going on logistically. And then, you know, and that's just day to day. We haven't even touched on, you know, we've gone through 16 countries, we need visas, we, you know, can't aid the passage for the van, it's all like, it's chaotic, man.
I mean, yeah, that leads into the planning element as well. You know, it wasn't just a case of we were sat having a couple of beers. What went into planning this trip?
So I kind of first looked at it about three and a bit years ago, and thought, you know, I reckon I could do that, but I need some money. So began the journey of trying to find someone to give me some money to do it, which, you know, from working class lad, I ain't from money. So, you know, that was hard, really hard in itself. And then, you know, recruited a team, had to persuade some people to come with me, which wasn't actually that hard. You know, a lot of people love the adventure. And then, you know, so begins planning all the visas and the route and all of this kind of stuff, which, you know, it's been a long, long journey. It's been.
Talking of the route, one of the questions I've been asking ever since I saw the route, what inspired the decision to wrap around the West Coast rather than following that sort of more traditional Cape to Cairo route through Tanzania and Kenya?
Yeah.
Sudan, obviously we know now, but that wouldn't have been happening.
Yeah, so... Cape to Cairo is obviously quite a famous route that people drive and cycle, and there's a couple of people that have even run it, I think. But the whole point of this mission is that it was the most southern point to the most northern point. So obviously the most northern point's in Tunisia, and to get to Tunisia, you've either got to go, you know, if you go up the east coast, then you've got to go through Sudan, you've got to go through Libya, or you've got to go through some Central African countries, which, when we were doing the planning, we were just heavily advised against that. So then West Coast kind of looked like the only real option, and we had to wrap right around to, you know, Dakar, Senegal, which is the most western point, because that was the only kind of safe route, really. And even now, it's still a little bit like...
Right, I was going to say, there are some sort of flare-ups. In terms of safety, I mean, it is you guys. We've watched some of the videos, obviously.
Yeah.
You're finding random camping spots.
Yeah.
You know, the one episode, they're talking about a guy let you camp in front of his barn. And
said
it's safe, but how do you know?
Yeah.
I know in the Northern Cape, you ran into a spot of bother.
Yeah.
Some guys on the side of the road. What goes into security?
The honest answer is that we don't have the budget to properly to do security properly. So we are just trying to be as sensible as we can and use common sense to kind of navigate a lot of these different situations. You know, largely, I think 99.9% of people are good people and will generally help. But obviously, there is people in desperate situations that do desperate things. Mate, we'll just try our best, you know. I think it's part of it, you know, and we've just got to ride with it as much as possible. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I mean, I could keep on talking all day. I've got so many more questions.
Yeah.
That I'd love to ask, but obviously you need to get back to running.
Yes.
So just to finish off, where can we follow your progress, send you some motivation as much as you're motivating us?
Amazing. Yeah, so we're all our social channels are Hardest Geezer. So Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, we're everywhere. So you can come and find us there,
and hopefully we'll also get some updates from you guys along the way that we can share with our listeners.
100%. Amazing. Nice one. Cheers, mate. Thank you for having me.